Welcome to Witness Rugby Chat, episode 4 of 2025, and we come to you basking in the glory of a win in France in round one for Widnes, which was not predicted by either myself or Mike. So we got off to a cracking start, Mike, but we don't mind that.
No, I'd say I don't know about basking given our predictions, obviously. You know, kind of writing Widnes off, I suppose, and then poking the bear up at Boundary Park as well. Yeah. I'm sure a couple of the ex-Widnes players might have listened to what we were saying.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a bit later on. But in all seriousness, no, a good win for Widnes. It was good to watch it. We speculated on the YouTube situation last week, but I was able to watch the full game, and I thought Widnes played. I think I thought Widnes played in a way that we've come to expect under Alan Coleman. Always in the game, always competitive, and even when Toulouse were on top, Widnes were always within reach of them. I thought the penalty on half time, I was absolutely furious about, to be perfectly honest. I don't know how the referee came up with it. Ryan Lannan's got the ball. There's three men on him in the tackle. He's trying to swat the third man off him, and it was a penalty bang in front of the sticks on the hooter. I couldn't believe it. I was like, there'd be a penalty at almost every play of the ball if that's what you're giving them for. And at a spell in that second half when it got to, I forget what score it even was now, but I think when it was, I was thinking, Widnes are going to lose this by 2 points.
Yeah,
and it was going to be because of that penalty. So in some ways, I was glad that it got to there. But we'll have to talk about Steve Tyra disallowing that try as well. I don't know how he managed it.
Well, I thought he was going to take the flag off the linesman at one point. So, well, 10 out of 10 for passion. I mean, any little game you can get, he got, didn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was hard to tell, obviously. You know, there's only one fixed camera, which I'm not complaining about because obviously it was great coverage. But the referee had the whistle to his mouth, was pointing for the try. And then the Toulouse flashed the graphics up, didn't they? So you couldn't actually see what was going on. And then they came back and they were having like a scrum on the 20 metres. And you were thinking, hang on, why is he not kicking the goal?
Yeah, I mean, it was remarkable defence, you know, to say the least. The slide and that, like you say, never say die attitude, and never knowing, you know, when to give up, when you're beaten, and all that was on display. And certainly that play where, like I say, whatever's happened, the ball's been dislodged, and yeah, a fantastic moment. And everybody in the bridge suite thought it was a try. I'm sure you did. I think it, like, say everybody but Steve Tyra thought it was a try. But yeah, what a fantastic piece of, you know, defending, and probably summed up the effort, actually, that the players put in. And, you know, the fact that, you know, Eddie, Tom and Steve have headed over with the team earlier than what Alan could travel out is, you know, it's full testament to the full coaching team and the players, the effort they put in.
Yeah, I've seen a few comments after the match about Widnes's pack, and that I thought Lannan was excellent. I saw Langtree, I think, got man of the match in League Express. It does feel like, you know, on touch wood, don't want to be creating injuries or anything, but it does feel like probably for the first time in a long time that Widnes have got real depth in the pack, where even if, you know, one of your big men are off the pitch, let's say a Ryan Lannan, they've got someone equally effective. And, you know, Gavin Bennion's a decent championship prop. He's coming on as your sort of seventh or eighth choice forward in some ways. And it does encourage you that perhaps Widnes have got that pack formula right at the moment.
100%. And it's not just the depth, it's the versatility of the forwards as well. You know, you've got Max Roberts, who, you know, mid-game can be a forward or a back without disrupting anything. Roderick Lloyd, not that you'd want him to, but can do the same thing. You spoke about Ryan Lannan. He's equally as effective on an edge, and you've seen his angle he ran for his try, a fantastic angle. You know, timed his run to perfection, but in the middle, you know, is an animal. And I think the difference this season that we've seen, you know, that we haven't seen in time gone by, first of all, the Packet is reborn now over the Alan Coleman era. Nearly every single forward has been replaced or been brought in. And when one of your more dominant forwards goes off, there's another one ready to come on. And it's getting to that point now. And you know, Toulouse faced that problem on Saturday evening where you're not giving teams any respite. There's no dip, if anything. The players that are coming off the bench are actually lifting things. And then there's the challenge of the starting middles who are coming back on. They've got to lift it again. At the moment, touch wood, it's looking a fantastic recipe. I think the only downside was, I think we lost Liam Kirk, didn't we, to a HIA, which, you know, was a little bit disappointing. But other than that, it was all positives where the Pack was concerned. It was probably one of the most complete performances by a Widnes Pack I've seen in quite some years, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Alfie Johnson went off with the HIA as well, I think, didn't he, the winger from Warrington. It was easily missed. You don't realise, actually, when you're not at a game and there's no commentary, it is very difficult to pick out what's going on. I do remember commentating on Catalan versus St Helens one year from the BBC studio, and Tommy Makinson had gone off, but because we were just doing it off the feed, you know, from France. But because they're so close to the, you know, like when you watch it on telly, they're so close to the play, but you've got no idea whether a winger's gone off or someone's gone off on the sideline. And it was a bit like halfway through the game, you're like, where's not seen Tommy Makinson? And that was what happened with Alfie Johnson at the weekend. Just one other thing I wanted to mention. I like the fact that, I think Deck Patton, you'd have to credit him with probably three try assists. I like the fact that both Roberts and Lannan scored tries off sort of the same play, which just goes to show that, like you sort of said, the versatility is there with the Pack in terms of, well, if you've got someone on Patton's right shoulder, they know they've run a line, he's going to find them.
100%. And look, Tom Gilmore, masterclass, getting us round the field, playing off them forwards, getting us upfield, his goal kicking. I think 100% record for the second week running. That's going to count for something this season if he can continue that. But Deck Patton, I think for people who was dubious about the signing, I think that performance at Toulouse kind of shows what you're going to get from Deck. He's got them moments of brilliance. That tip on pass to Ryan Lannan, it was like a knife through butter. It was absolutely on the money. It was beautiful, to be honest. And if them two can stay fit, behind this Pack, you've got two of the best halfbacks in the Championship, and it's really exciting. I just really hope he can show us some consistency, which is probably one thing he hasn't done over his career. But just moving on to just another player who I thought was outstanding as well, was Joe Lyons at fullback. You know, I believe Joe Edge, you know, pulled out with 24 hours notice, essentially. The teams had to have been moved around. I'm pretty sure the idea would have been that Fleming would have played fullback. Now, Joey, he's lost his position at the moment for the time being in the halves. He's, you know, he's had to play interchange hooker at Crusaders and contributed. He's then gone to fullback, and as far as I could see, he didn't drop a ball. The try, he had to come up to the line and the kick went behind because of the way the play was going. So I don't think he was at fault. And for a player who has, you know, in the past, you could say, suffered with confidence when he's, you know, been replaced out of the team, and, you know, when somebody's been back fit, he's fell out. I thought he was second to none. I thought he's shown great confidence, and it'd have been easy to kick stones. And actually, he's probably pushed himself forward. So, do you know what? If I'm not playing in the halves, there's an alternative position here for me to get into this side. I know we've just signed a lad on loan from Wigan, Hodgkinson, which you'd think he'll be, you know, covering the fullback role. Maybe we'll see Joey back at hooker at weekend for a little stint, but he's certainly done himself the world of good, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, Tim Sheen's really rated Joe Lyons as a fullback, more as a halfback. And I suppose if you're asking for endorsements, you're not going to get many better than Tim Sheen. So, yeah, I mean, worth noting that Widnes won that game without a few key players. You know, Jack Owens, you mentioned, Jordan Johnson sidelined, Joe Edge, you mentioned as well. Reece Williams couldn't travel either. So you're probably talking four of your starting 13 weren't there. So for Widnes to come away with a win there, is a terrific result and a good way to start the season. You were in the bridge suite. I saw your video that you put on, Mike. What was it like in there? What was the atmosphere like?
Oh, it was electric. It was absolutely brilliant. It probably helped the situation that it was the first game of the season as well, which obviously helped drive people in. You know, I think everybody, the stream worked. It didn't stop once. That was my concern. Did we have enough equipment and the people who was in France who could fix it, X, Y, and Z? Was it going to be a success? It absolutely was. It was a sellout. And, you know, I think the result was the cherry on the cake. I think my word to the club would be, do it again. It's easy money to make. Of course, you can't do it for the local away games, I don't feel, because you have got that risk of, you know, putting people off from travelling to the game, potentially, for a much cheaper price. But I think the other fixture they should definitely be looking at doing it for, to earn some extra income, would be the London Broncos game away from home.
Yeah, that's on a Saturday in May. I know that because I'm on holiday in Cornwall and I come back on the Friday night, and then I'm going to have to boot it back down to London on the Saturday to go to the game. But yeah, you've got to be careful. You've got to be realistic because, of course, Widnes want people to travel to Widnes as well. And ultimately, if you start showing your away games, then the teams you're playing at home will want to show it at their place just the same. So you've got to be careful. But I think it was a good initiative. And, you know, listen, if Widnes only do it for Toulouse away every year, I think that's a result. To be honest, for what it is, it certainly looked good on the videos. Moving on then, because we've got a bit to go through. We've got Dan Fowler, who is a Sheffield Eagles fan and journalist, who's on in the show to give us his insight into the Sheffield game. But there's been a little bit of news coming out of the club this week, so we run through that. Starting with a new director, Matt Roberts. I think it said his uncle's Tony Chambers. I think I read that. I've not made that up, have I, Mike?
I'm not sure on that one.
Sure, I haven't made that up. His uncle Tony Chambers. I knew I hadn't read that. Would have been a bizarre thing for me to make up.
I was going to say, yeah, I hope it is.
Yeah, but Matt lives in Birmingham, travels to the games from there, and Tony Chambers is a former chairman of the club. He's joined as a director and shareholder. We are hoping to have him on the podcast in a few weeks, and the club have said that they're going to do a bit more introducing of him very soon. So that was one piece of news. A bit of news that sort of started murmuring just after we recorded last week was that Cameron Brown, the Australian utility, has left the Vikings. He was absent from the team photo, which was shared on social media, and that started getting tongues wagging, but the club eventually confirmed it on Wednesday this week that the 23-year-old who joined from Cornwall in the off-season has gone. Brown, I think, to me, Brown was, I wouldn't say a panic buy, because I don't mean that in an offensive way. But ultimately, Widnes had signed Jake Mason. Let's get it right. Jake Mason was coming, then he isn't. And I think Cameron Brown just sort of was someone that was available that they could take a look at and have a punt at. And, you know, it's not worked out. I think he's probably not at the level that Widnes require him to be at. Widnes can't really afford to carry players of that nature. But I also think there's perhaps a little bit of an underlying message here with regards to recruiting Australian players or players who are away from home. He's the second Australian Widnes have signed in this regime over the last 6-7 years. And he's the second Australian who's basically being released without playing a game. Now, with all due respect to, well, I mean, it's not even a locality thing, you know. I think the bottom line is, Widnes are a part-time rugby club. They train 2 or 3 times a week. So if you're an Australian player, you've got, what, 4 or 5 hours contact with the club in the week plus a match day. You can sort of see why that would be difficult to navigate, you know, and obviously his departure is being given as personal reasons. It doesn't surprise me. I think where Widnes have maybe got to get savvy with it is if they are going to go down the route of recruiting players from outside of travelling region, they need to recruit them in pairs, or, you know, a bit like what Whitehaven do and things like that, where they bring them over and at least them lads can live together and spend time with each other, whether they get jobs doing something else, or, you know, maybe it's a thing that Widnes's Community Foundation needs to grow to a sufficient point where they can start employing these players in the day. But that's my two pence on it anyway, Mike. I'm not sure what your view is.
Yeah, no, I'm much the same, James, certainly with that last point that you made there. For me, I said to the people who was I was watching the, you know, the Warrington friendly game, there was, you know, I was a little bit concerned with his body language when he was getting put under pressure. His head seemed to go down, and then, you know, he's absent from the Rochdale and Crusaders game. Now you'd think a project signing, which was kind of the message that ended up getting filtered out. Of course, they can't tell us anybody's personal circumstances. Obviously, it was kind of the message that got told to the fans to keep everybody, I suppose, on board and quiet about it. Was, you know, that was the ideal game, wasn't it? Or games to see somebody play who is a project signing and get some game time, confidence and minutes. And I think when he was left out of them two teams, I think the writing was on the wall then. And then, of course, you know, you get to the squad picture. But yeah, I'd hope that it doesn't personally put the club off recruiting overseas players again, because I do believe that, you know, it can be a massive advantage for teams, and it works for so many teams. The amount of sides we play, and it'll happen this season time and time again, where the opponents play, you know, the opponent's best players, you know, are overseas players. But I think where it comes in and where we need to look at ourselves in terms of a recruitment strategy, if we're going to do it, it needs to be smart. And ultimately, like you said, up at Whitehaven, you know, and Workington have the same. It's a close community. They're all living in close proximity. And with it being a part-time club, all the players are working through the week. A lot of the staff are working through the week. So like you say, the contact with the club is very limited. So it's all the more important to have players already embedded in the community that are kind of familiar faces, going through the same things, have friendships, have families. That's another thing. If you are going to recruit somebody coming over, if they've got a family coming over as well, that always helps. I think they're the things that we need to maybe look at and be a little bit smarter if we're going to do it again. But I think for this season, the smart money is to try and stay away from it. Obviously, we've brought in Hodgkinson for the weekend. You'd assume Taylor Ray would have been first choice, but I imagine he's too close probably at the moment to Warrington's first team.
I think probably with he was 18th man actually last week, Taylor Ray. I think the problem with Warrington at the moment is this Vegas thing. I think that's the problem. I think once they've got past the Vegas trip, I think Taylor Ray will become available, because I think at the moment they won't want to send him out in case something happens to him and he can't play, if something happens to Dufty and they've not got cover for him to play in Vegas. I think they're going to want to take a decent number of, they're going to be taking a decent sized squad to Vegas. They're obviously going to take at least 21, but I get the impression that they want to have a few of the young lads around there to, you know, experience the, you know, what it's like over there, and that being part of that team, that squad unit for a good few days together. So whether the fact Hodgkinson's in for a couple of weeks means Jack Owens is only a couple of weeks off, we don't know. I didn't speak to Alan after the game on Saturday, wasn't there. So hopefully we'll find out a little bit more about that after the game on Sunday. An easy solution to the problem would be to just bring Ollie Ash or Bott back to Widnes. So there's your long-term plan. I've got that covered. The Challenge Cup draw, which in fact was last week, we haven't, I was thinking that we'd had a podcast since then, but we haven't. We talked about who we'd like, and it pretty much came up trumps for Widnes drawing Warrington at home.
I don't think it could have gone any better, could it? And it broke when the game was obviously going on in the bridge suite, which you can imagine, you know, the reaction to that. And good on the club, and or clubs, should I say. I think I seen a little bit of debating on Twitter earlier before I come on about the kickoff being moved to, you know, accommodate the fans who'd be interested in the football and the rugby. Me personally, I think it's the right thing to do, because as soon as the draw come out, there was people all around me going, I hope they avoid the Liverpool game. I hope they avoid the Liverpool game. So for me, just for the people who I kind of heard, me, I'm not bothered either way, but I think it'll help get a few more on the gate, in my opinion. And I think the lads and Alan, I think they'll be right up for it as well. Nothing to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted this. I'm a bit annoyed it's 5 o'clock and not 6 o'clock, because it puts me in a bit of a pickle with football. Whereas if it was 6 o'clock, I could have done both football and rugby on that Saturday. But I understand that. I think Warrington play St. Helens the following Friday. So I think Warrington were probably reluctant. The noises I was getting pretty early on was that Warrington wanted to play on the Saturday afternoon. Now, Widnes FC were meant to be at home on that Saturday. So I'm not 100% sure what's happened to their fixture. Obviously, it's being moved because they're not going to be able to play at the same time. But Widnes Football Club were due to be playing on that Saturday. So I guess there's been a little bit of negotiation around that, which is why it took a little bit longer to sort out. I did see someone suggest that Widnes FC be playing earlier in the day and then they'd be changing, but I can't imagine they'll be doing that, because the size of the posts, the rugby posts at Widnes, I don't think you can turn them round too quickly. But it's 5 o'clock on the Saturday. It's £20 for an adult if you've got a season ticket, or it's £25 if you're not. Let's have a debate about ticket pricing, Mike, because I know I see a few comments on this, and a few people do mention this to me quite a bit, that ticket pricing at Widnes is bordering on, I'm trying to think of a word that's not too controversial. Pricing at Widnes is high, in my opinion. Certainly for kids, I think it's £12, something like that. I think I see clubs doing under 16s for free or whatever. What are your thoughts on them cut prices and prices generally?
I think Rod Steele addressed this actually at a Members Monday, and what he was kind of saying of why it is what it is if they do drop the price, are they going to make the price difference up that they charge anyway? You might get slightly more on the gate, but if you added it all up,
but
I'm not sure there's an air of confidence that you're going to make up the price. And I suppose it is a profit thing as well.
I just think that's a very short-sighted way of looking at it, because I think if a kid, I think it should be £20. I don't think it should be any more than £20 for adults. But I think kids, to charge kids £12, they're the people that in 10, 15, 20 years, they're the ones who are going to be paying the full price. And ultimately, if you can't get them, if you can't get them in at the moment, I seen an example. I think Kev he's called, tweeted me an example, and I can't think what it was off the top of my head. But it was basically, we were talking about the Hunslet game last week, weren't we? And the Hunslet prices, although they were bad, because it was, what were they charging? Was it £25 for that one as well?
Yeah, that's outrageous.
But for two kids and two adults, it'd be £50 because it's free for kids. Yeah. Whereas at Widnes, yeah, it might only be £24 for adults, but you've got to pay the £12 extra for the kids. So it's like working out at Widnes, that'd cost you £72 or something like that. The figures might not necessarily be accurate there, but you get the gist where two adult prices is one thing, but for two adults and two kids, if you're charging kids prices, all of a sudden two adults, two kids becomes a massive amount.
No, 100%, mate. Look, the kids ticketing scenario and stuff, I'm on board with that. That should be as cheap as you can possibly do it, in my opinion.
Because I just think they dish out free tickets.
For me.
They dish out free tickets, but I just think that's counterproductive. I've said, I feel like I say things over and over again on these podcasts, but I just think it's counterproductive to give out. People say, oh, give free tickets to schools. Like, yeah, it's all well and good giving a free ticket to a school, but then when the following week it's 12 quid, it's like, there's no point. You just make it a couple of quid every game so there's a token. You know, people are paying, they get used to paying 2 or 3 quid, but actually it being 2 or 3 quid or 5 or whatever isn't going to make them turn their nose up at it and think, oh, you know what I mean? I'm not going to come. Whereas 12 quid, you're turning your nose up at that 100%. You're turning your nose up at that. Especially, you know, I haven't looked, but I'm sure I could go and probably watch Warrington or St. Helens with a kid for probably less than that, which isn't, or not too much more. And, you know, yeah, I think that needs dealing with. The debate you mentioned about game time was an interesting one. Stu Glendon, who you know listens to the podcast, was basically saying that the club's thrown away 20 grand by having it on a Saturday rather than the Sunday. I think he was trying to make the point that Saturday games aren't as popular as Sunday ones. But I think for a one-off game, given that Liverpool are playing in the Carabao Cup final, which, like it or not, there will be fans who watch Widnes who are going to Wembley. There will be fans who are watching Widnes who want to watch that football match in the pub or at home or whatever. Like I said, Warrington didn't want to play it on the Sunday anyway because they've got a game on the Friday. So I think as a one-off game, it makes sense to have it on the Saturday. Friday night would have been nice, but of course the players are part-time. You've got to take that into consideration. I want to throw this debate up there, and I am by no means suggesting a change because I quite like the Sunday at 3. But do you feel like Saturday evenings would be more popular than Sundays at 3?
Well, I know quite a few people who would like a little bit of a selection of both. I think we all like the routine of a Sunday at 3 o'clock, but there are a lot of people as well who wouldn't mind having a bit of a free Sunday and, you know, having a game on Saturday evenings. I know I've spoken to a couple of players as well, and they're on the same accord. Whereas when we're playing on a Sunday, for example, you know, they're preparing and sometimes training on a Saturday as well. So if you have the game on the Saturday, they get their day off on a Sunday. And when the part-time players who are working all week, that's gold to them, you know what I mean? So have some family time. But there are a lot of people who I know actually quite closely who would be quite up for, you know, every couple of weeks there being a Saturday under the lights game. And to be honest, I think I would as well, to be fair. I'm with you. I like the 3 o'clock Sunday games, especially the away games. I like the routine of it, but it would be good to, you know, just have a bit of trial and error. I don't think it'd have too much. It wouldn't do too much damage to try it out, I don't think.
I'd probably say I'm probably 80% of me thinks stay with Sundays at 3 per, you know, every game. Because my argument with football is I think football does very well in this country because every game, you know, below a certain level, I'm not talking about Liverpool or Man United, everyone outside that top echelon of teams plays on a Saturday at 3 or a Tuesday at 7:45, and you can put your house on it that every Saturday between August and May or April, the team that you follow will have a game at 3 o'clock, and it makes it so much easier for people to get into the routine of going to games. And so that's why I'm always a big fan of sticking with the same, you know, the same Sunday at 3, Sunday at 3, Sunday at 3. There's no reason it couldn't be Saturday at 3, by the way, but Sunday at 3. Could you make the case of in the summer when football's not on, is there scope for playing more games on a Saturday night? Maybe. I think there's an argument. I see people say, oh, well, move from Sundays if Man United or Liverpool are playing because, you know, they'll show them on Sky at 4:00. But I'm a bit like, if you're going to start moving them for... I get it when there's a cup final, but if you're going to start moving it for Man United against Fulham or whatever, I just think you're never going to win doing it that way. It's on the Saturday anyway. Warrington, the Warrington Challenge Cup game. It's Saturday, March the 15th. I think I've got that right. It's not being selected to be televised. In fact, none of the games are televised. I think one's being streamed by the BBC and one is being streamed by the Sportsman. I think the Sportsman have got St. Helens versus Leeds. and Sportsman showing Wigan against Hull FC. I've seen quite a few people say, why have they not picked Widnes Warrington? To be honest, I'd be more miffed if I was Bradford. Bradford have just beat Cass and they're playing Salford and they've not been picked to be shown. But I suppose it'll help the club because ultimately if you want to watch the match, you're going to have to come.
100%. And you know what, the you know, in quotations, the television selections, I think what they've done is they've tried to pick what would be the best game and the best crowd as well. Whereas I think at Widnes, there'll be a great crowd, I'm sure, but there is a potential, you know, for, you know, one of the Galacticos of Super League to, you know, come to Widnes and against the part-time opposition, a potential of, you know, the game running away from Widnes purely through physicality and fitness and so on and so forth. And then the Salford and Bradford game, you know, Salford aren't renowned for having, you know, the biggest of crowds. But I think for me, that'd be out of all the games, I think, obviously other than ours, I'd be quite intrigued to watch the Salford and Bradford game because you had that Bradford, you know, Challenge Cup game against Castleford where they held on and it was in their backyard at Oddsall and they played the game the way they wanted to and it suited Bradford's pack X, Y and Z. Now they're going to Salford and they're playing in a Super League team's backyard. The pitch is like a carpet, lovely playing surface. Salford, by that time, we'd hope, will be in a lot of better state than what they was against St. Helens. I think it'll be a good yardstick to see how good Bradford really are and how close are they to them Super League sides that you could potentially say are going to be at the bottom of Super League.
Yeah, well, we've got a few weeks until that, so we'll look forward to doing a bit of build-up to that Warrington Cup clash. Course, first time Widnes will have played Warrington in nearly 7 years in a competitive match. Let's switch the focus back to the weekend ahead. Widnes taking on Sheffield Eagles at the DCBL Stadium on Sunday. We invited Dan Fowler, Sheffield Eagles fan and journalist, onto the podcast to see what he could tell us about Sheffield and their probably rather unique situation. Ahead of Widnes' game against Sheffield on Sunday, we're joined by Daniel Fowler. Dan, well, I might let you describe yourself if you want. Saved me a job. Sheffield fan first and foremost, but tell us your backstory.
Yeah, used to work for the club, volunteered first of all for the club back in 2014, all the way from my uni years, 2015 to 18, and had a bit of a side account that I used to promote the stuff that I were doing on the official account on Sheffield, put it onto Sheffield Eagles News. And yeah, that's kind of it, really. I've went full-time with the Eagles, 22, back in the 22. Had a year with them and then decided to travel the world with my now wife for a bit. So yeah, and now we're back. I can't remember where I were when we played Widnes home and away last year, but it were definitely not at the OLP and the DCBL, I know that much. So.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I sometimes wish I wasn't at the OLP whenever I go there because...
Oh my God, I know. We're telling Mikey and Rick, the Halifax guys, and they were like, and I just said, just count your lucky stars, you don't come here once a fortnight, you know? It's,
yeah,
it's,
I mean...
It's an interesting place, to say the very least. Yeah
we always have a nightmare with broadcasting there. I think last season we broadcasted the second half off a phone, stood behind the posts because we couldn't get the signal in the press box. You can't hear yourself think in that press box either because of where it's situated. The season before, I think it was on a Monday night and it was on Premier Sports. We actually went on the top of the mound behind the behind the goal, but they wouldn't let us.
You can remember.
They wouldn't let us go on it last year. And I remember having a set two with one of the stewards basically saying, look, we can't broadcast because we've got no signal. I know we've got signal there, but he wouldn't let me up there because it was a health and safety issue. I don't know how it's a health and safety issue, me going up a little hill. I remember saying to someone last year, I was like, this is an absolute joke. Like, this is a requirement of, you know, being in this league. And, you know, we can't even commentate on a game. Man.
It's not good at all. Yeah, so it's just one of those. And especially when you're playing a nighttime game as well, the lights are terrible as well. So it's just no redeeming features whatsoever. Unfortunately, you know, it's just small, and that's kind of that fits obviously what the Eagles. But you can't really get any new fans in, you know, because it's like it's not much of an atmosphere either, you know. It's Charlie Best little taxi army in the corner, but with a drum button that you don't really, yeah, it's not ideal. So
I know there's talk of a new ground with Sheffield FC, but it strikes me, you know, obviously I'm in the rugby league media, I'm sort of in the background to a point, so I hear things that are going on, but certainly the move to this ground hasn't gone as successfully as perhaps the club would have liked. Obviously, the club wanted to get back into Sheffield in the first place, which, of course, was a positive. But sure. I just get the impression that it's not gone where they expected it to.
No, absolutely not. So I think the main aim was for the Eagles, with their guy with the money, to for them to build the stadium and everything like that. And I think in like the 11th hour, Kevin McCabe came on board with Scarborough Group and wanted to, when he was at Sheffield United at the time, and it was mainly to be for a ground for the Sheffield United women. And now he went away like from the background of Sheffield United, and they got took over, and then so it became a bit of a second like fought for him, you know. So anything that kind of went about of the plan to make it into a proper stadium just didn't come about, you know. It's a strange one, really. So yeah, let's move to the Sheffield FC again. It's a weird one. Well, with Sheffield FC, the transport at the other end of the city, whether it'll come about or not, it's the traffic around there. It's where I went to college, close to where I went to college. The traffic around there is absolutely horrendous as well. So that's a stumbling block. I've not been up to date with like the latest. I think we'll find out more in the next few months, but say like a few months ago, you know, so don't know what's going to happen. It's a strange one, to say the least. But nothing's ever straightforward with rugby league, and nothing's ever straightforward with Sheffield Eagles either, so...
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because I think we were talking around the IMG stuff before Christmas that I think Sheffield actually score more than Widnes for facilities at the moment, which is...
No, it's strange, isn't it? It's, well, I think the biggest kind of laughing stock would be that I think Donny's is less than Oddsall's, I think, maybe, or something like that. Or like they've got a gantry of a certain... that requirement, and Doncaster don't, and it's like, what on earth is that about? When they're like doing semi-finals and World Cup games and everything like that, and it's just, yeah, it's a joke, really, isn't it? It's a joke. So,
because in spite of sort of all the off-field struggles Sheffield have, well, largely with the ground, generally on the pitch, they're always very competitive and
later bouts.
Yeah, and people, you know, Widnes fans probably look at it. Maybe not now, maybe not last season, because Widnes did well, but in previous seasons, you're looking at it thinking, well, hang on, Widnes get 3,000 every week, got a decent-sized fan base, you know, decent look, whatever. Yeah, we can't make the playoffs, but Sheffield, who are playing in front of 1,000 every week, are easily making it. I know they didn't make it last season, but there was probably an asterisk on that, to be perfectly honest.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's... We've always kind of punched above his weight a little bit. Yeah, it's like when we were at the Don Valley, 2012, 2013, were like the glory years, really, for me as well, because I'm like just watching this team, and you go into matches thinking, how many are we going to win by? Not whether we're going to win or not, you know, like Menzieri scoring like 50 a season, QLT and everything like that. And we had a decent fan base there, about 1,200, 1,300. And I think that was just from not spending like a ridiculous amount. I'm not sure. I'm obviously not privy to that information, but we never really overstepped the mark. 2016, we were kind of led down the garden path, thinking that a guy we've wanted to come on board full time money. We inquired for Greg Inglis, and we only had enough to buy George Tyson from Oldham. So you know, that were a non-starter. We did play very well. It were a Bawtry Road, which were very temporary, and it was where we, they used to do the training as well. So yeah, it's a and I, he took his bat and ball home halfway through the season. We had to go go with the begging buckets, and that's the only time I ever remember us having to do that, to be honest. So yeah, it's that's just the way it is. Unfortunately, we tried to shoot for the stars, and we nearly got relegated. So
is it? I mean, you know, we'll talk about Mark Aston, you know, shortly. Yeah, but is it a case of you look at Mark Aston, is it a fact that he can build, pull these teams together based on his ability as a coach, but also his ability to sell Sheffield, which is ultimately what he's been doing for the last however many years?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's just from, obviously, it'll be a hint of bias from myself, but I speak to Tubbs like every week for 6 years maybe. And just even when things weren't going well, you had that little camaraderie of players. For example, 2018, our best player were Matty Fazard by a mile. It was unbelievable. He joined us when we were full-time, 2016. And those years were unbelievable. Like, he was just a standout. He was unbelievable. Like a young lad coming out of St. Helens. And he gets those players that are like, that you can keep and you can build a team around, and that's what he did. Don't get me wrong, we didn't really hit the heights that we wanted to, but then 2019 you get the 1895 cup win, obviously against you guys. But it's, yeah, he just seems to, the amount of sleepless nights he must have had, and but he kept going. It's a shame how it ended. Well, I say ended, he's still with the club, but yeah, it's a strange one how it ended. But yeah, everyone has great thoughts about him, and yeah, he's still around the club, which is good as well. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one for the Widnes. I'm sure Widnes fans following this will be aware of the situation where he's Mark Aston got suspended at some point last year. Yeah. He's ended up being banned for a period of time, but he's still around the club in a director of rugby. Yeah. Well, he's sort of a background director, but he will eventually be director of rugby.
Yeah. Yeah.
But last season they were pretty much top three boxed off, weren't they? Until
absolutely,
that.
Yeah.
Sheffield were sort of up there with Toulouse and Wakefield.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. A great start. I mean, I were having to get up at like 8 a.m. South American, Central American time to follow the games on Twitter, because we don't have any radio coverage. So it was all Twitter, apart from when we played likes of Barrow, Whitehaven, for example, and you guys, so I could listen to it on the BBC. But yeah, it was a great start, and we were just thinking, yeah, we're kind of going toe to toe with Wakefield for a little bit, and then just all went downhill. Yeah, it's that Wigan game. We had a good dig against Wigan as well, winning for a time. I think we were drawing at half time, but yeah, it just so happened that was the undoing of us for the year. Yeah, with obviously the Matty Marsh saga. So yeah, it is what it is. It's a tough pill to swallow, but you know, it's, I guess with the likes of IMG, you knew even if we were going to win, finish top, and win everything, that we're going to go up anyway. So you know, it's that's kind of the carrot has almost been taken away, but we know that the stadium's no good anyway. So
it's funny you mention that carrot, because I've mentioned it on this before, where last season Widnes started really well. I mean, Widnes generally start seasons pretty well, to be perfectly honest, and then you get, clearly Widnes have got, you know, with all due respect to Sheffield, Widnes have got a lapsed fan base, you know, obviously averaged 7,500 in Super League. So when you start doing well, you get people coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, you start coming back to games. You'll see it when Widnes play Warrington in a few weeks, there'll be a massive crowd there. But the problem is now you get people coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, can we really get promoted this season? And then you have to turn around to them and say, actually, it doesn't matter, we could win every single game and you're not going up, which is you know, it sort of kills any momentum that you hope to build.
It's true, yeah. I think it's weird, because I've said that, but then 2012, 2013, when we went back to back, they're the best years I've ever watched the Eagles, and I wouldn't change anything for the world. Don't get me wrong, it'd have been good if we'd have been able to go into Super League and have a crack. But it's like, it still doesn't take away from the fact that we were the best team in the Championship at that point, even though we never finished top. So that's it. That also feels a bit weird. But yeah, don't get me wrong, if we have another trip to...
Was that the Featherstone T-shirt era? Was that that time, or was that?
I don't know if that was more. They did go coin a little bit of Destination Super League around that time. They had a guy, Faisal Nahabu from Probiz Jungle as well in Cass. They, yeah, he had. And I think they put out a few statements about wanting to buy Earl Crabtree, Danny Brough and all them from Huddersfield when they were in the pomp. And it's, yeah, so they've had a few interesting characters over there. So, yeah, it's...
Sorry, I interrupted you there when you were informing about the championship, because it is a point that I've been trying to make. You need to make it so that winning the championship in its own right is actually like something that you want to achieve as a club, because you know, Super League isn't the be all and end all. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's great when you're in, but ultimately there can only be 12 teams in it and there's plenty of other rugby league clubs. Why can't we make the championship something like, oh, blimey, we've won the championship this year?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's something they've got to think about. Yeah, because obviously you're playing the long game. Obviously, everyone targets the grand final, but it's like when we were good, 2012, 2013, that's the kind of like, oh yeah, September, it's Sheffield's time and everything like that. And it just so turned out to be we never really played any pre-season games, so we always ended up a little bit like flat-footed to start with. But I think that was all part of a master plan, you know? So yeah, making sure that you've got like that, obviously it's the league leader's shield, but it's like, yeah, you serve cups of tea on it, you know? It's like, it's not really any good, is it? So, you know, how they kind of can spruce it up a little bit and make it a bit more like they care about the championship in the lower leagues, it's something that we'll have to see how they do. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether they do or not.
Back to this season and obviously looking ahead to this week. I want to ask you first about Mark Aston. What is the fans' sort of opinion? You know, you can't speak for every fan, but what's the fans' position on the situation? Where, you know, clearly he's still got to be around the club, because clearly without him there probably isn't a club. Are fans sort of disappointed in him for what he did? Are they dismayed at what he did? Do they feel he's been harshly treated? What's the position?
I think the vast majority think he has been harshly treated, but the problem being that like it's tough, because I think the RFL tangled themselves in knots a little bit as well with some of the stuff about like the investigation, not telling him he's actually under investigation, just the guy having a chat with him, and it's like very informal and it's very strange. So yeah, some feel like he's been harshly treated. I thought like from the outside looking in, I thought it was the right decision. You got, if you've alleged to have done something wrong, you're going to get suspended. That's the crux of it, I think. But yeah, but there's a lot of loyalty obviously from the fans to Mark Aston, and obviously there can be blind loyalty within that as well. So yeah, you get a lot of that. I think what I'd want is that if we obviously lost against Halifax, didn't play very well. If we lose again this week, we lose again next week, just try not to get on Lingard's back, because at the end of the day, he did a pretty decent job at Castleford in tough circumstances, took Batley to the grand final and semi-final in back-to-back years. Like, he's a great coach in his own right. He deserves time. So, yeah, hopefully we can give him that. It's one of those that we've not got many fans, so they might not seem to be under as much pressure as what he would be at other clubs, which sounds a bit strange to say. But yeah, I think that'll be it. So yeah, hopefully we give him time. But yeah, on the Aston situation, it's a tricky one. But yeah, I think there'll be some that will think he's been harshly treated, and that's why, including the former chairman Ian Swire, and that's why they got the directors, they got behind him to like have the former directors got behind him to kind of have a bit of a push with all the media to be like, look, this is what happened. It was just a bit of a misunderstanding sort of thing. Yeah, so...
Has he still got the games? Is he still allowed? I presume he's still allowed.
Yeah, he's part of kind of like the hospitality sort of thing, you know, like doing the behind-the-scenes sort of thing. So he is there, but not on the rugby side of things as far as I'm aware. But I don't know whether he's still... I don't know if he's still technically suspended. I'm not even sure, to be honest. I've not really done much research on it, to be honest. I've just gone straight back into reporting on him for the League Express. So yeah, it's another weird situation. Not something that I'd never known. So yeah, it's a strange one.
You mentioned Craig Lingard there. I think I wrote on Twitter. When he got banned, he was sort of looking, he was a bit like Brian Potter was looking for his Jerry St. Clair at Sheffield. And to be honest, I think they came up trumps with Craig Lingard. I think, to be honest, I'm not sure who I thought that they might get, But like you say, he did an excellent job at Batley. I did quite a few games at Cass last year, and I thought, you know, given the squad that they had, I thought he probably deserved a bit better. I actually think they probably should have tried to give him the job earlier than he got it. He got it at the end of the season, didn't he? He probably should have got a bit more of a run in for it. So in terms of a coach, I almost think that it's the perfect fit for Sheffield because he's clearly a very good coach. And, you know, you've got Mark Aston in the background, probably he's recruited most of the squad. You know, I dare say that a lot of them players are at the club because of him. So actually having someone in who's a pure coach could actually work. It could actually prove, even when Mark Aston does come back at some point, you might find that that combination might be the one for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, is it kind of when he was a player, a creative playmaker sort of thing, scoring loads of tries while Tubbs were setting him up. So, you know, it's one of those that he's not afraid to move the ball about. There were quite a few people that were a bit dismayed that we were kind of taking it up, like a bit of five drives and a kick sort of thing against Halifax. Well, the fact was that we were so deep in our own half after every Halifax set that we couldn't do anything else really, because if you're chucking it hard to the wing when you're on your own 20 and you're knocking on, you're going to be like, what on earth are you doing, you know? So you can't win. So yeah, we just kind of got pinned. Like I'd say the vast majority of that game last week, 70 minutes of that game will have been played deep in our own half, and it just so happened that we took the lead in the first half but just couldn't hold on to it. But yeah, like you say, with Lingard, it's a great that's who I wanted. There were murmurs of Danny Ward, but obviously he's an assistant all KR and that would have been a really big swoop. But yeah, it's Lingard, he's got a good relationship within this family because my better half's a Batley fan, so yeah, she were very obviously so, but maybe not so much if we beat him and do the double over him this year. But we deserve to do that, I think, after last year.
Yeah.
So they did us.
So, I mean, I think most people would have been surprised maybe by that result, not last week against Halifax. I don't think Halifax haven't really been talked about much. They've got a very thin squad. I think they've only got 20 of their own players. And to be honest, I rate the Sheffield squad. I think I tipped Sheffield to even push for the top three this year. Which other people might not agree with, but that's by the by. So I guess you would agree with that it was a bit of a surprise, a bit of a shock to lose to Halifax?
A little bit. It's tough when you're starting Jack Bussey at hooker. It's like, you know, you can tell that we've got injuries. Alex Foster started at centre as well, so there were no James Glover. And then Alex Foster and Blake Broadbent both in the first half got Ed Knox. We had to use his 18th man, Massi Matonga. So, yeah, it's and we had Ryan Miller on the bench who wasn't used either. So I think we don't really know kind of the injury situation because it's tough. We've been having this discussion on the Eagles supporters page, people wanting to know what's what. And you can almost be too open because obviously opposition coaches won't know either what's going to happen and who's going to be on the verge of returning. So I think Lingard and I think the club as a whole are keeping the cards close to the chest because we don't know who's going to be returning. If we're going to be at full fitness, we're definitely not going to be with likes of Foster and Broadbent out. But yeah, we struggled against Halifax. They were just really good. They were Jack Hanson, Brandon Douglas, Jacob Fairbank, they were my three kind of main men for them. Fairbank did 80 minutes. Douglas were unbelievable in the forward pack against his former club. And Anson ran the game with a boot. So, yeah, it was a tough one to take when two of those three are ex-Eagles, you know. But, yeah, it's we'll have to see if they can bounce back because they're going to need a big shift from the pack, I think, because yeah, they rolled us a little bit, and Conrad Orrell were great as well from obviously on Joel Reg from Saints. So
yeah, I mean, I flipped through the Sheffield team. Obviously, Matty Marsh wasn't playing.
No.
Corey Johnson, who by the way, I seen him play at Widnes for Featherstone years and years ago before he retired and then came back. He was there on loan on Joel Reg from Leeds, and I thought he was going to be a hell of a player. And then he sort of retired and he's come back. I think he's a very good option. You've obviously got Reece Butterworth as well. But Mitch Clark, is he still around? He was missing.
Yeah, no, there were no Mitch Clark, no Connor Bauer, no Ollie Roberts, no Corey Johnson. Reece Butterworth were on the bench. And he turned the game around, really, the first half at least, when he came on, because we were just so much more snappier from dummy half, obviously, when we had Bussey. The Bussey played it, so the last 2 weeks, Bussey's played at six against Wigan. and 9 against Halifax. So who knows where he's going to be? But he's not let us down either. It was one of those when we signed him. Obviously, we've got Faz, Joel Farrell, who's a bit of a hothead, but he's a proper captain. He's a proper captain nowadays. I mean, he might get red carded now. I've said that at the weekend, but him and Bussey, both in the pack, could be spicy. But yeah, they both kept their heads so far. So yeah, hopefully that continues.
Yeah. So coming to Widnes on Sunday, Widnes had a decent result at Toulouse.
Absolutely.
Last week, but Sheffield have got a decent record against Widnes. I think Widnes have only won one of the last six, I think, against Sheffield, which was the home game last season, which you could say was a D-Mark Aston game, if we're going to call them that. What are the expectations? Does Sheffield feel like they're going to keep that hoodoo up over Widnes?
I don't know whether it's me, or I think last week kind of knocked the stuffing out of me a little bit as well, and especially with a couple of more injuries in there as well. So I've listened to Lingard's pre-match interview, nothing about any of the players, as in who's coming back. So we'll have to see on that. I'm always a pessimist as well, so I don't know, especially after last week with Winners' great win at Toulouse. So we'll have to see. I feel like it'll probably be a close game. I don't know if anyone's going to run away with it as such, but because especially with the both teams being like pretty adept on that pitch, that type of pitch at least. So yeah, I think it's probably going to be a Widnes win, but we'll have to see.
before we let you go, me and Mike had a bit of a stab at some championship predictions last week. Who are you fancying this season? Are we going to say the B word?
It's quite funny because if we'd have done this last week, I'd have looked like a right muppet because I would have said York. They've got absolutely smashed by Oldham. So, and it's one of those, Oldham have got such a good, if they keep Josh Drinkwater at 60% fitness, he should play with a dinner jacket on most weeks, I think, at least, because he's just, I think he'll have kind of what it takes to really turn them around with a kick. We've turned teams around with a boot. Yeah, Bradford, especially on that pitch, like Lego, isn't it? Really, I mean, I can't say anything about bad grounds, but you know, it's not ideal. So yeah,
it hurts them away though, because it's so. I remember Widnes under John Kerr, and to be fair, Widnes have got a really good record at Oddsall. I think Widnes have won four of the last five at Oddsall or something like that. You can set up to play it once. You can do it. But for Bradford, they're playing on it every other week, but then they've got to go to Sheffield, which is a massive hit in comparison.
True, it is.
Like, does that then mean that, you know, if they get used to playing a certain way at home, is it going to be hard for them to adjust away?
Yeah, probably so. I think it was my first game back from travelling when we were in Bradford at home. So, and I think the one thing we didn't do was so many big middles and just making them work and in defence at least. So they were too knackered to attack, but that just didn't happen. So you're Franklin Pellis, you got Ronan Michael in there. I think that's such a big pack and such a wide range of players to choose from. But yeah, and you look at some of the backs as well. I think Blake, Tafua, Ockenbaugh could all play in the pack for any championship team really, and they're backs. So it's like, it's really, really strange. So yeah, I guess it's how you tire out their middlemen, I guess, on the big pitches. But yeah, it's got a lot of talent, Anley, as well, and he's a shrewd operator, is Nobby as well. So yeah, I think can't look past Len. But yeah, anyone's to take the 2-6. I think it's up for grabs.
Brilliant. Well, Dan, thanks for joining us. Thanks for your insight, and hopefully you enjoy your trip on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, nice to meet you guys.
So Sheffield, the visitors on Sunday, and I guess, Mike, after the start of the season against Toulouse, expectations will be fairly high at Widnes on Sunday.
100%. If you can mirror that performance, you're in with a hell of a shout, aren't you? And a massive carrot in front of us. You know, if you win, you're 2-2 from, let's face it, when the fixtures come out, if we'd have won them from two, nobody would have been surprised, because they're two very, very difficult fixtures. you know, you'd leave Sheffield on no points and, you know, York or Toulouse would be on no points because they play each other also. So it's, you know, it's a massive opportunity early doors to get 4 points on the board, especially with, you know, Sheffield suffering with their own injury, you know, mini injury crisis as well.
And I suppose in some ways, people are going to be excited about the Warrington Cup game. This is actually Widnes's only home game before then. So it'd be a good way of sort of leading up to that, wouldn't it, to give the home fans something to cheer about. I know it's Hunslet away, isn't it, the next week in the Cup, and then it's Batley away in the league the week before the Warrington game. It'd almost tee up, it'd certainly help with ticket sales, I would imagine, for that Warrington game if Widnes can pick up a win this Sunday.
Oh yeah, it's a golden opportunity. It really is to showcase, you know, what you're about in live action. You know, what we've seen in Toulouse was everything you want. I mean, we waxed lyrical about, you know, the forward pack and how well they've done and how much it's come on from a couple of years ago. But you compound that with Matty Fozzard in the middle and, like I say, with Depp Patton and Tom Gilmore, you know, by the sounds of things, Sheffield was struggling to get out of their own half against Halifax. And, you know, there's a massive opportunity there for our forwards to go and take another scalp and be dominant in a game. And, you know, there's potential there to put points on the board. And, you know, fans love to see points, don't they, and tries. Ultimately, that's what brings people to rugby league games.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see just who at Sheffield is named in the squad. As you say, we mentioned Corey Johnson, Matty Marsh missed last week, Connor Bauer, Mitch Clark, Reece Butterworth was only on the bench. So it'd be interesting to see how many of those. I know Dan mentioned injuries to Alex Foster and Blake Broadbent as well. So it'll be interesting to see if any of them come back. And indeed, of course, if Widnes, you'd expect Reece Williams will be back for Widnes. I would say probably the signing of Hodgkinson probably suggests that there'll be no Jack Owens. But yeah, you'd expect maybe, I don't know how bad Joe Edge's injury was last week. I think it was an illness that they said it was? But Joe Edge could be back. Reece Williams, you'd expect would be in the team. Other than that, Liam Kirk, you said he'll be missing because of the concussion protocol, but generally witnessing in a fairly decent place, and you never know who they might end up pulling in on Joe Reg.
Definitely, and certainly the two players that you mentioned, Reece Williams and Joe Edge, arguably for me through this pre-season period, including the Cup games, them two have stood out. They've shown the combinations that, you know, getting to know each other, linking up. Edgy set him up for a hat trick. It was kind of the highlight of pre-season, and going over to France and neither of them are available and we've still come out with the result is yet another example of, you know, us going through a little bit of turmoil ourselves and backs against the wall and coming out with that result. So if them two are back on Sunday, it's a massive boost for us. It really is. And you could arguably say then we'd be fielding a potentially a stronger side than what we did in Toulouse on paper.
Yeah. Right. Let's go on to our predictions.
Are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah, we have to bring this up. So last week, I came up on the fly, to be perfectly honest, with a decision that we were going to do predictions every week. And we seemed to fail miserably in the first week. Just to recap, I was a lot more confident than Mike. I predicted to lose by 4, so I wasn't too bad. I just got the team wrong. Mike went to lose by 16. And I mean, I'm very pessimistic, Mike, but that was perhaps too pessimistic. Other than that, we both got 3 out of 6. We both predicted Barrow, Bradford and Featherstone would win. You weren't far off with Featherstone. You went Featherstone by 16, they won by 18.
And I did say as well, in fairness, to make some points up for myself, I said if there was going to be a shock, it'd be Halifax as well. We'll get that one in
there. I'll have to re-listen to the recording to see if you said that. So we both got three. I think probably based on that, we don't need to bother with the margins anymore. We'll just predict winners for the coming weekend. This weekend's games. So we're 3-3 after the first round, Mike. This weekend's games are all on Sunday at 3 o'clock, ironically, based on our previous discussion. Halifax have got Barrow at home.
Yep.
Which is an interesting one because, like I said to Dan, no one was really talking about Halifax. They got Kyle Eastman as coach. But you'd expect them, with the way that they've started the season, with the win last week, they'd almost be disappointed now not to beat Barrow at home.
100%. I think with Halifax, they've had probably the best preseason out of everybody in terms of preseason performances. Last season, you know, above everything else going on off the field, they did pick up some bad injuries to key players as well. Brandon Douglas and Will Calcott missed large chunks of the season, and ultimately they're pack leaders. Brandon Douglas, especially, probably one of the best props in the championship, pound for pound. He'll, you know, take on anybody, really effective. But yeah, I can't look past Halifax. Barrow, you know, took a bit of a hiding at Oldham a few weeks ago. Now we know there's no shame in that. But then was really dominant themselves up against Hunslet. Yeah, I'd say Halifax, but I don't think it'll be a walkover.
Yeah, I'm going Halifax, but I do fancy Barrow to. I wouldn't be surprised if Barrow caused an upset. I'm going to go Halifax, but I wouldn't be surprised if Barrow. I think sometimes it's interesting when teams win games where they're not expected to. I think maybe it leads to complacency the following week, especially if you're playing against a team that's perceived to be weaker. And I just feel like Halifax are one of them teams who they've got a bit of that in them. Hunslet Bradford is the other one. Bradford had a bit of a struggle last week, didn't they, against London? I think they were getting beat at half time 6-4 before I think they won the second half 14-0. Hard to see anything other than a Bradford win at Hunslet, Mike.
No, you know, hats off to Hunslet to. You know, making a fist of things, you know, signing plays like Lachlan Hennigan, you know, Kevin Laroya, Greg Eden, they've tried. But ultimately, when I watch them at Swinton, what they do lack massively in abundance is size in the pack. And I think the coming up against the biggest pack against the smallest pack, I think is probably a bit of a mismatch. So not much more to say on that one, James. A comfortable Bradford win, I think.
Yeah, London Featherstone. London, a funny one because, like I said, they competed fairly well with Bradford last week. They've still sort of only got half a team. They've signed Liam Tindall, haven't they, this week, who was formerly at Leeds and Hull. I think when they announced their squad numbers, they've got Alex Walker's number one, but then I don't think they had a 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. I would imagine the London Broncos you get later on in the season will be a lot different to the one that they've got right now. It's their first home game, but can't see them turning Fev over, can you?
No, top coach down there. Probably, you know, at the moment, the most important thing for them is Mike Eccles. And you're right, you know, squad numbers missing. They're going to be better later on in the season. You know, they've still got some quality players, like you said, you know, Walker, Sadiq Adebayi, you know, Lewis Beanek. We've got 6 or 7 there who would get into quite a lot of championship sides. And the cavalry has started to arrive. Liam Tindall have just scenes gone down there to sign. So he'll probably pick up one of the winger positions. But yeah, I think too early to be looking at beating Featherstone, who I highly rate this year.
Oldham, obviously the Golden Boys at the moment, they've got 2 home games to start. They've done well to swindle that. They're playing Batley at home. This week, Batley, I think, are probably they're not where they were a couple of seasons ago. It's fair to say. I've even heard some people talking about them for for maybe one of the bottom three positions. Again, is that another obvious call, an Oldham win?
Well, off the basis of last week, you'd have to say so. And in fairness to Oldham as well, I noticed Danny Craven more or less pulled out on the warm-up, so they had a bit of turbulence going into the game. Riley Dean was going to be 18th man and he ended up playing. So, you know, even with that, I think they shocked absolutely everybody. Budgets, you'd have to say so, but we know what this Batley side's traditionally about. They're very dogged, pardon the pun. But yeah, I think the form Oldham's shown last week, you've got to go with Oldham, haven't you? And probably by a couple of tries at least.
Witness Sheffield then. This is going to be a test of your superstition, Mike. Do you carry on backing against Widnes in the hope that they just keep proving you wrong every week, or are you actually going to back them this week?
Well, I actually think we're going to win this week. Now, if we don't win this week, Alan Coleman is going to be speaking to you in his post-match press conference saying, can you just stop this prediction league? No, I really back us. I liked everything about the performance in Toulouse. You know, I think Sheffield are maybe going to do a bit of a reverse on last season, it looks like. Maybe they'll get stronger as the season goes on. It's our first home game. The halves are playing really well for Widnes. Matty Fozard's on point. I think the battle between him and Reece Butterworth will be fascinating. I'm confident. I think we're going to put in a really good performance and I'm looking forward to it, and I think Widnes will win.
I absolutely hate predicting Widnes games. Even when you're coming into the ground and someone says to you, what do you think? I never used to give a serious answer as people who used to go to the game with me will testify. I think Widnes will win this week. But I think they've just got to be careful that they don't look at the results last week and think that it's a given because Sheffield lost and Widnes won. I think that's probably the message. The final game, and you touched on it earlier, is York Toulouse, both sides who lost on their opening week. Now, York are a funny team because they seem to start seasons appallingly every year. We sort of talked about that last week, thinking, oh, maybe it'll be different this year with Mark Applegarth in there from the start. But based on the scoreline at Oldham last week, they were definitely cold. Toulouse away from home typically aren't as strong as at home. Tough one to call, this one, maybe.
Toss of a coin, James. It really is. Arguably the most intriguing game of the weekend. What I will say is, from what I've seen of Toulouse, and this takes nothing away from the Widnes performance whatsoever, it was glaringly obvious they was playing with one half back in my eyes and lacked a bit of craft and creativity. Anthony Marion needs to be back in that pack as soon as possible. Match that up with them travelling to York. York, I don't think, can be as bad as that again without watching the game. Mark Applegarth, I rate highly. I don't think he'll be having that at Boundary Park. I think you could see the Knights snatch this one just. But same could be said for Toulouse, you know, an upset in their backyard. They could be hungry and go to town on York, but I think a narrow York win if I'm pushed to it.
Yeah, I've gone York as well, which means we're both tipping exactly the same this week, which means we'll still be tied next week when we do this predictions. Let us know what you think's going to happen this week in the comments section on the podcast, wherever you listen to it, on the Widnes Rugby League fans Facebook page and on Twitter. But for Mike and myself this week, that's all for now. Widnes at home to Sheffield on Sunday. We hope to see you there, but if not, we'll see you next week.